Let's do this thing.
Okay.
Simon Mercer, welcome to Crave, the podcast dedicated to music and movies, theatre, television, just about anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
This week we have a podcast that's heavy on the music side of the ledger, with concerts from, well, relative newcomer Harry Styles and performers of a significantly more mature vintage, Stevie Nicks and Chrissie Hynde.
Indeed, from a British rock outfit out of Birmingham with a few decades of experience under their belts, they're called Ocean Colour Scene. And we go from that end of the spectrum to a 26-year-old from Auckland called Miller Yule.
And we do, because that's what we do, squeeze in a couple of films. We've got an example of Hollywood sweetness at its most saccharine. That would be a film called Wonder. And we'll also have a quick chat about two British acting giants. This will be Sir Kenneth Branagh and Albert Finney.
He's not a sir, is he?
Not that I know of. If he is, no. We apologise, Bert, mate.
We do, Sir Albert, if it is Sir Albert. Anyway, let's start with a very big name in pop music right now. He's Harry Styles. First grabbed attention, I think this is right, Steve, on the British talent show X Factor. He was a member, of course, of One Direction, and what, a few squillion records later, he's launched a solo career. And on the way, not that long ago, we saw him, didn't we, in that a pretty solid acting debut in Christopher Nolan's movie about Dunkirk.
Yes, he was. He did not disappoint in that, did he?
No. But this very weekend, it was back to the music, and he brought his solo show to Auckland's Spark Arena. And our frequent and, I must say, incisive reviewer, Debbie. Hello, Debbie.
Hello.
You caught the show on behalf of Crave.
I did.
Now, I understand, Little Bird has whispered to me that there's quite a bit to say about this, even before we start to talk about the music. So what's all this about, what happened before the concert started and getting into the arena?
Well, it all started a few years ago. I'm just kidding. I've been a big fan of One Direction for quite a while. I think they're a really fun pop group, and I really like their music. I think they've done a good mix of being young but having some really mature songwriters, so the music's always been fun for me. So I really was looking forward to Harry's debut tour.
Yeah,
really looking forward for quite a while. So I think, you know, hopefully that didn't set me up for disappointment. We'll find out soon. Having seen a few things, first of all, a lot of people lining up for the Melbourne show. Also, having seen Spark Arena putting out some information about how people were not to be lining up before 8 a.m. got me a little bit concerned about getting my space in the front GA of this concert.
Yeah.
So
we
lined up at approximately 11:20 a.m. for a 6 o'clock p.m. opening of the doors. So I was in line for quite a while. I have to say, Spark is really good about, managing the crowds and keeping people happy. They had wardens, walking around with sunscreen and, things like that. They do a good job. I'm always impressed with Spark. So that was good. I didn't mind waiting in line. I actually read an entire novel, to be honest, on my Kindle. I did. But it was a beautiful day. It was great. It was part of the experience, being in line for so long. Lots and lots of young women, which, of course, it was predominantly young women, as usual with this sort of show. But so that was great. It was fun. Doors opened at about 6:15. They were running a little late. But that was fine. And he originally was supposed to have a smaller portion of the arena set up for his show. But I think because, you know, they sold so many tickets so quickly that they ended up selling more, they shifted shifted the stage a bit and ended up with a little more space. So I was in the front GA portion. They also had a rear GA portion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen that before. Okay. So you got there. You had a lot great time waiting. And and was there a band before him?
What was her name? Maddie Jane. She was, I guess she was a little bit on the country side. She was a really good performer. The sound wasn't great. She commented on it herself. But she was really good. And I think the audience really, really enjoyed her. I did.
Okay. Cool. But Harry was what they were waiting for.
Absolutely. Of course.
So tell me.
Well,
what about
I would say my overall impressions are if you were there for some outstanding music, you probably were disappointed. If you were there to see one of Harry's impressive Gucci suits, you were, again, probably disappointed. However, if you were there to experience Harry in all his amazing, adorable glory, you were not disappointed. If you were a 20-something young woman, you were not disappointed. You had the time of your life. And unfortunately, I am no longer a 20-something young woman.
Ah. Well, not you sound like it, but okay, yeah. So, let's just explore that a little more. What was it about the music and that wasn't quite, or the sound that wasn't quite there for you?
Well, I thought that the sound was just a little bit muddy. I don't know whether it was the sound system. I don't think it was the band. I mean, I think they were really good. The drummer was fantastic. I don't remember her name, but she was really good. And the sound just sounded a little muddy. I thought that the music wasn't really tight. I think that was partly Harry, to be honest. I mean, I love Harry, so I hate to say anything bad, but I don't know that he's really, really prepared to be doing his music live at the moment.
Is that right?
Yeah, I just think it wasn't really tight. It didn't sound as well produced as it should. I mean, I know it's live music, but it still just didn't sound what I expected.
I guess we have to remind ourselves, I think he's still only about 23, isn't
he?
Something like that.
He's very young. It's true. Yeah. And I think, as Steve had actually said to me when we were talking about it earlier, he really should be playing smaller venues. He should be playing more sort of like the Power Station or kind of club type things.
Yeah.
And I think it would have gone over a lot better. The other issue for me, which is a really big one, is I really had a hard time hearing him sing because the audience, full of young women, sang all of the songs and screamed the entire time. And I've got video to prove it. You really couldn't hear much of what was going on. When I did hear him, he didn't sound really on top of it. He just didn't. I mean, he was adorable though. I mean,
yeah.
You know, he did talk to the audience. He sang happy birthday to one of the girls in the audience whose birthday it was that night. So I'm sure that was probably the highlight
she
of
melted.
Her entire 23 years of her life.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure she did. He was really personable. He was absolutely adorable. He did look good in his black suit. It wasn't, you know, one of his cool and interesting Gucci suits, although it might've been Gucci. I don't know. So it was a little disappointing for me.
Mm. Okay, just the mere fact that you were struggling to hear him sing tells me that for the 99% of the people who were there absolutely loved it and lapped it up.
That is true. I think that you're right about that.
Yeah. Hey, just before you go, Debbie, I was just thinking that you have done a lot of great reviews for us this last year. I hope we're paying her well, Steve. I think you're getting what Steve and I are getting, aren't you?
It might be double.
I was just thinking, you've seen Harry, seen Justin Bieber,
I have.
Ariana Grande, Debbie Harry and Cyndi Lauper. There's probably a few others I've missed.
Little Mix, The Vamps. I don't know if I've reviewed those. For
I mean,
you, but, yeah.
I just of the group you've seen this last year, is there one show that's absolutely standing up for you, saying, "Wow, that was just the best"?
Good question.
You're putting you on the spot.
You are putting me on the spot. I'm not really sure. I mean, I always love seeing Justin Bieber in concert. I've seen him, I think, 4 times now, and he's always good. So I might have to go with Justin Bieber. I mean, I loved Ariana Grande, too. I didn't go in being a big fan of hers, and I'm not sure that I'll really follow her, but I loved her live. I thought she was really good. But yeah, I'm still going to have to go with Justin.
Okay. Well, hey, you just call it how you see it. That's how it is. Okay. Hey, Debbie, thank you so much for seeing... Harry Styles on behalf of us at Crave Pop.
It was my pleasure, Simon. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, now Steve McCabe swings back into the chair.
Here I am. Yes.
Effortlessly.
Absolutely, because that's what we do.
Yes. We've still got some more music to talk about, though.
We do, we do, we do.
Let's stay at the Spark Arena, shall we, Steve?
I think we should. I mean, I was there last night. I was in the crowd for Harry Styles as well. And I think what Deb said pretty much encapsulates my experience as well. He's good, but he's not quite ready for prime time.
Okay.
I mean, I'd have to. One thing I will comment is a very, very curious choice, and this actually segues interestingly into what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah.
You know, he admitted he's got 10 songs. That's all he has.
Okay.
He's got one solo album. He's got 10 songs on it, and he played them. And so that's not enough for a show. Yeah. And so he did a couple of One Direction songs. He did an Ariana Grande song that he wrote. Called Just Another Piece of My Heart. And when I first saw that on the set list, I thought, oh, wow, he's doing a Janis Joplin cover.
Oh.
And I was bitterly disappointed when it wasn't Take Another Piece of My Heart. And it turned out to be a song he wrote. But there was one completely non-Harry song on his set list, and that was The Chain by Fleetwood Mac.
Okay.
Which he, he played it. And I don't think we can say a whole lot more than that, to be absolutely honest. I mean, look, there's a video linked on the Craig website, a YouTube video of the song you can judge for yourself. But it was, I don't think he covered himself in glory.
Well, that's a shame. Of course, we had the original, or one of the original performers of that song at the Spark Arena only a week before.
We did indeed.
Yes, part of a double act. Was a pretty, if you're talking about rock credentials, you can't go far past, on one hand, Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders, and then Stevie Nicks. But,
oh, yes.
Look, Steve, for me,
yep.
I have to say this was a concert of two contrasting halves. Good at first and then not so good, basically.
And far be it from me to argue with you, Simon.
You can argue all you like. I have to say that I think that some of the diehard Stevie Nicks fans who were there would argue with me and probably string me up from the highest tree for daring to suggest that maybe Stevie Nicks wasn't the most wonderful act ever. But before I let loose, what about you? What are your overall thoughts?
Well, the truth hurts sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
I mean, look, should we start with the positive or the negative?
Should we be kind to begin with then?
Well, if we're being kind to begin with, Chrissy Hynde was incredible.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yep.
We started off with Chrissy Hynde and a Pretender. That would be Martin Chambers. Their drummer, who was a member of the band from, I'm looking on Wikipedia here, 78 to 86, and then 94 to last week, and possibly more recently as well, I don't know. But he's their current drummer. And, I mean, he was amazing.
I agree.
Hynde herself, I mean, she's 66 years old. I remember you turned to me at one point, Simon, and you said, if I look half that good at 66...
Yeah, I'd be very happy. Yes.
She was amazing, wasn't she?
She was... Yeah, I mean, she had a... she looked fit, energetic, hungry for the job, like she didn't look like she was going through the motions. She had a real energy to watch. A sort of kick-ass type of a persona was on display, and quite rightly so. She said, if you've come looking for some guitar driven rock and roll, boy, have you come to the right place. And that was,
and she was not wrong, was she?
No, and that's what we got. And I thought, yeah, good on you. And Martin Chambers was fantastic. And there was a song, I had to check on it, Thumbelina.
Oh, my
name
word.
Of the song.
Oh, yes.
Near the end, he did a fantastic performance behind the drums, going flat out.
Yes.
And the crescendo and the increasing as the song went on. I thought his arms were going to fall off at one point. It was amazing.
And again, 66 years old, and if I've got half that energy at that age, I should
not
complain.
You know something that's right.
Oh, yeah. They were phenomenal. And the other thing that she did, which I think is a really smart move, is she's got a bass player, she's got a guitarist, and she's got a keyboard player, all of whom are, basically children. They're young, they're energetic. She's got basically a young band around her. And it was an amazing show. I mean, her voice, you turned to me at one stage, I think, and said she sounds better than she sounded on the records.
Mm. Her voice is good, yeah, and she's got the attitude. I thought, probably what was also a wise decision. I think she played an hour or just over an hour.
Yeah.
But it was a good hour. You know, it was a quality hour.
It was a greatest hits hour, and that's exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, and it was. They were well delivered. You know, yeah. There was no sense of going through the motions here.
None at all.
No, I didn't get that. So good on you, Chrissy Hynde. What was to follow?
So that was the high point. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you can start if you like.
Oh, you booker. You're going to make me be mean, aren't you? So, well, here's what happened. I went back to work the next day and I spoke to a colleague at the high school where I have been teaching, who is a music teacher who'd been to the show on the Monday night. We were on the Tuesday night.
Yes.
She'd been on the Monday night and she couldn't say enough good things about it, but she admitted, I'm a Stevie fan. And I would imagine if you are a Stevie fan, you would have walked away from that show with a great big smile on your face. Now, for these purposes, Simon, are you a Stevie fan?
No. I've always appreciated the hits of Stevie Mac. I think they're one of those bands who...
Stevie Mac?
Did I say Stevie Mac?
You did.
Okay. Stevie Mac and Fleetwood Nicks, yeah.
There you go. That well-known backing band, yes.
I have appreciated Fleetwood Mac and her solo career very much, but I wouldn't have said I was a big fan. But I did enjoy hearing some of those wonderful, well-known songs. And I think her voice... 69 years old, a little bit older than Chrissy Hynde. Her voice was good, was strong, but
it wasn't the voice that was the problem, was it?
No. The key thing to appreciate here is this was a very long set, and it was long because in between the song, many rambling stories, life and times of Stevie and how she wrote songs and who she met. And I guess, as you say, Steve, if you're a wonderful, you know, if you're a fan, you just lap it up. But if you're not, I found the stories were too long. I thought they sapped the energy from the show. They made the show drawn out, and the stories are a bit dull. One or two insights that were interesting, but like you, on the way after the concert, Steve, I was heading back to my car, and I ended up in a lift full of concert goers, and I actually asked them. I said out loud, "What did you think of the stories?"
And they said.
All of them turned around and said, fantastic.
They were wrong. They were wrong.
Well, anyway, so I was in a minority, but I just didn't think the stories worked for me. I think they diluted the music and robbed the show of energy and impact for me.
Yeah, there's one moment that absolutely encapsulates that for my money. That she closed with Edge of 17, which is by far her biggest song. It's a cracking song. And again, there's a video of this on our website in the review that we wrote for it. There's a link to a video for it. You can hear. She played it reasonably well. I'm of the opinion that it might be time for her to hang up the shawl and the microphone and give up, because she did not nail it. But it's the big show. It's a big song. It's a big show-closing song. It's what everyone's waiting for. Great big production. And if I'd been producing that show, I would have had the lights go down and the stage empty, and that would have been it. But she finished the song, and the lights came up, and she talked about it. And as you said, it sucked the energy from the show.
Yeah,
that's not how you construct a show. I'm sorry. That was bad stagecraft.
So... I agree with that. I don't think it'll be a show that'll stay for long in my memory, unfortunately.
No.
Even though she will always hold a strong place in sort of rock history, I think. But now is the time, maybe, to, in my opinion, to gracefully consider something else or delivering it in a different way.
There's a thought.
Deliver it give us a really good quality hour, maybe like Chrissy Hynde did. Then I think that'd be different. But
or alternatively, go next door to the Tuning Fork and do an intimate show where she tells tales.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, yes. In fact, on Broadway right now, dare I say it? Dare I say it?
But
on
seriously. Oh God! You made you do it.
On Broadway right now, Mr. Springsteen is doing exactly that in a small, intimate venue. He's doing 5 nights a week of acoustic guitar and stories.
And the thing is, that, you know, most people for either artist, and I'm not giving St. Bruce a hard time here, but most people want to hear the songs and then leave. There will be a small hardcore of diehard fans who really want that. And that's suitable for a more intimate venue. But when you've got Stevie Nicks standing 6 foot, 5 foot six tall, and then 30 feet of photograph of her and Tom, as she called Tom Petty, because obviously her and Tom were besties. Yeah, her and Tom on a 30-foot high screen behind her. It just felt, I think, self-indulgent is the word, isn't it?
It was, yeah, I think it was. And it made me think of a show that, did you catch when I did last year, Joan Armour Trading's show at the Auckland Town Hall?
That was the night you and I first concocted the concept of Crave, Simon.
My God, how could I forget that?
But for shame.
Cheers. But Joan Armour Trading also had a video screen. And,
she did.
And there was a few little stories, but it was much better crafted. It was a smaller venue, not so much chit-chat. And when she did it, it was well-chosen words. And that was quite, I enjoyed that night very much. But that was a good example of tailoring the show to the size of the audience, the size of the venue and so forth.
I remember what you're talking about very, very well. I mean, it was 3 years ago now, but it stuck in my memory because it felt very self-effacing. It was, look how fortunate I am. I have been privileged to have had the opportunities I've had, and look what it's led to me. And wow, haven't I been privileged?
Yeah,
whereas Stevie wanted to talk about all these wonderful people that she has worked with, and haven't I been brilliant? And I wrote great poetry, didn't I? And the contrast between the two, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's quite stark, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing that Stevie did do was she was a lot of preaching about, you know, grab life and live life to the fullest and follow your dreams. And I think there was that type of line in her patter was went too far, and it got a bit tiresome towards the end.
Well,
anyway.
When you're a moderately talented and attractive young white woman growing up middle class in California in the 1970s, it's very, very easy to say that.
I think we should move on.
Oh, I could kick her around all night, to be perfectly honest. I mean, all I would say is I could forgive anything if I just remembered to start my video camera recording for Goldust Woman, because that was genuinely brilliant.
Yep, fair enough. Now, you're going to be kicking me now, because just before I start asking you a little bit about the British band Ocean Colour Scheme, who you've seen
stepping. Well, are you going to ask me how to pronounce their name? Because Ocean Colour Scheme.
Did I say scheme? See,
you did. Colour scheme, makes sense. Yeah.
Colour scheme, yeah. It's called Pale Red for Embarrassment.
Yes, that's the one.
I think they're often called OCS, is that right? I understand that.
I've heard them referred to as Scene, Ocean Colour Scene, OCS. Okay. Oh, it's a clunky name for a band, isn't it?
It's a bit. Well, look, those OCS made me think of a comment I made last time, and I'm going to offer a little explanation, Steve, so indulge me and you may laugh, but...
Oh, I fully intend to.
At the end of our last podcast, you were telling us about this band called TLC that was coming up. And you asked me if I'd heard of them. And I said something along the lines of, TLC, they're not that white British new wave band, are they? Your jaw dropped. I could hear it dropping all the way from Pukekohe to central Auckland. TLC are young... Three women, I think they're black or Hispanic.
Well, young once, to be fair.
Okay, all right, okay, youngish. They're Americans, and I think they're mainly their music is R&B or hip-hop or soul, that type of music. So, and they've sold a lot of records. So how could I think that such a band were white and British? What was I thinking, you ask?
What were you thinking, Simon?
And the answer is that I took those letters TLC, unscrambled them, and re-scramble them into XTC.
Which, easy mistake to make. They are so similar. The two outfits are so utterly identical.
Yeah, well, XTC was a British white sort of band. That was a new wave punk in the late 70s. I remember Making Plans for Nigel. Do you ever hear that song?
I do indeed.
There you go. And I think because XTC was a band around in my sort of, you know, teenage, late teenage, culturally formative years, Steve. That's why that name stuck in my mind. So when you said TLC, I just sort of, that was the image that came to my mind. That's a ridiculous excuse, but I have to make it in some sort of mitigation.
Okay. We will allow you to dig yourself out of that hole. I mean, at least you didn't think of ABC, which again as far away from TLC as one could imagine.
Possibly
KGB, but we'll move on. We'll move on.
So tell me about Ocean Colour Scene. I know that you've.
Ocean Colour Scene. Now, I remember these guys. I'm going to drop a little bit of a name here. And I met these guys back in 1999.
Oh, okay.
I met them backstage at the Fuji Rock Festival in Japan.
Wow.
I was, as one is, I was a special personal guest of Billy Gibbons out of ZZ Top.
Wow, you name drop you.
That's a name to drop, isn't it? I'll tell you that over a beer one night, Simon. Absolutely true story. Me and my friend Little Steve had access all areas passes. At the Fuji Rock Festival, an Ocean Colour Scene, among other bands, along with Happy Mondays and Catatonia and all the others, were on the bill. And I sat and chatted with these fellas, and I thought they're really, really nice blokes. And I had the, you know, because this is what one did back then, I had the CD of their album Moseley Shoals, which was a genuinely good album. Mm-hmm. And they are now touring. Ooh, it must be the 30th anniversary, I think, of the release of it. 20th? I can't do the maths any longer. It's an anniversary. It'll be 20th anniversary of the release of Moseley Shoals, which is just classic British dad rock.
Right.
And it's genuinely good stuff. And so I remember these guys. I met them 20 years ago. And I remember them being very nice fellas. And I was in the photo pit and the lights went down and a bunch of blokes walked on the stage. And I looked at this one fella who walked up to a microphone thinking he must be a roadie.
Right.
And then I realised, bloody hell, that's Simon Fowler, the singer. I mean, the years have not been kind to Mr. Fowler.
Oh, okay.
And then he started singing. And I thought, who cares what he looks like?
Right. Okay.
Steve Craddock, the guitarist, started ripping into the opening riff of their big hit Riverboat song. And quite frankly, I was back in Naiba listening to the Ocean Colour Scene of 1999. It was amazing. It's hard to imagine a band who have managed to keep their mojo as extensively as Ocean Colour Scene have. They were absolutely brilliant. They were playing the Power Station, small venue. The sound was superb. Streets ahead of Spark Arena for Harry Styles.
Yeah.
They were tight. There was four of them on the stage. They knew exactly what they were doing. You know, what Debbie said before about Harry still learning his craft is absolutely true. These guys have been playing for 25 years together.
And
they were brilliant. Yeah. And I could not get enough of them. It was one of the best concerts I have been to in a very, very long time. Again, there's videos on the website. Go and take a look. You'll be impressed. That's what a live band needs to sound like.
Fantastic. And that website, of course, is faithpodcast.com. Called Miller.
Yes, Miller Yule. He's favourite of yours, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a young Auckland singer-songwriter. We've talked about him quite a bit on the Crave podcast. We've seen him interviewed him when his debut EP came out. We've seen him perform for the first time with a band. About a year ago, he was performing at Spark, opening up for Ben Harper. So he's done pretty well, and he's just this last few days released a new single, a new song called Diamonds.
All right.
And I caught up with him during the weekend, and we're going to hear from him shortly. But this is I'd be interested to know what you think about it, Steve. You were talking earlier on about, with Stevie Nicks referring to Tom Petty. When you hear the opening chords of the song, very guitar-driven, my mind straight away went to, oh, that's got a bit of a Tom Petty sort of feel about it. And he definitely credits Petty as one of his influences. I thought you could see it here. This is a song, he's changed his production company. He's gone up to a more established company. I think that's got the sound is a little fuller, a little more rounded. He's hoping to keep writing and maybe later in 2018 record an EP and maybe or possibly an album. But anyway, Miller Yule is his name. I caught up with him during the week. Here's what he had to say. Okay, so Crave has returned to have another catch-up with Miller Yule. Hi there, Miller.
Hello.
Hello. We spoke to you, gosh, it must be a good year and a half, 2 years ago when we actually spoke
getting
to
up to that, yeah.
And I've had the chance to see you play a couple of times at the Ben Harper concert, which is about a year ago.
Yeah, it was this time a year ago.
And you've just now released a new single called Diamonds. Let's start with a new song. Tell me a bit about it. What's the idea behind it? And so forth.
Diamonds, it's the way I've been kind of describing it is pretty much that amazingly wonderful but horrible feeling of getting a crush on someone or being attracted to someone and then, you know, your thoughts kind of taking over and then it all kind of feeling so good that it starts hurting and it starts, like a good pain. Like, I really like this person, but at the same time, it's like they're tearing you up inside.
Hopefully all based on a true experience, I hope.
No, I can only write about experiences.
And I'm interested to hear about the sound of the song.
Yeah.
Because it's, I've heard it a few times now. It seems to be, a step up in the production side of things. It seems to sound even a little slicker, a little in the fuller in the sound. Yep. Can you tell me about how it was made?
Yeah, well, like my EP in 2016, it was all, you know, I did it myself with my dad and, you know, in a home studio and it was still professional, but it was very much, I'm doing this. This is 100% me.
Yeah.
This is like my business card and my, you know, I'm out there now. And then, from there we're like, okay, well, where do we go? If we do it the same way, we're going to have another song that sounds like what we've already done. So we're thinking, let's try something different. We've got a few new team members on board. And then, I got a review last year on my EP and it was a good review. There was nothing negative about it. I think one of the words was like, it's a good listen, but ultimately uninvasive. And just that word uninvasive has stuck with me since then. And I thought, okay, well, next thing I'm going to do is going to be invasive and attention grabbing and, you know, no more kind of Mr. Nice Miller trying to please everyone. I'm just going to, you know, kick someone in the guts kind of thing.
A pretty sharp pop. So I suppose a pop rock song would be the it's really guitar driven, isn't it?
So we're kind of trying to see where we can fit into the market, but also my influences of, you know, Ryan Adams and Tom Petty and James Bay and Ed Sheeran, kind of everything's kind of getting in there.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned Tom Petty. That his music did pop into my head a little listening to that.
Classic kind of Tom Petty guitar riffs and stuff.
So in the few months since I last saw you open at what was then called the Vector Arena, what you been up to in the last little while?
Yeah, so that was end of 2016. So then 2017 started with me just kind of head down, not really getting any summer or any beach or sands, just writing and then recording demos and then finding which ones work, which ones don't really work, and then working with this new team to develop a sound that builds on top of what we've already achieved. So I'm still Miller.
Yes.
I'm just, 2017 Miller as opposed to 2016 Miller.
Soon to be 2018.
Yeah, and so it's just been a long process of making sure we're doing the right thing at the right time.
How often have you been out and about gigging?
Gigging? Yeah, well, this year I'll do the odd kind of, you know, house concert solo or, you know, a quiet bar or something. We went down to New Plymouth with the band, which is cool. Auckland Council Music and Parks during summer is always good. But, yeah, like I said, it's been a big year of, you know, focusing on new work, and hopefully sure. 2018 has, you know, a lot more in store.
Well, tell us a bit more about that, because I guess you're releasing a single and with the hope that that's part of, at least an EP or maybe an album not too far away?
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to get something out this year just to be like, you know, we've done something, we've gotten something out for everyone. And, yeah, it's kind of marked the start of, okay, here's Diamonds, and then, you know, let's do a few more singles, let's see what else we can get out, an EP, an album or whatever, and, you know, just planning for 2018.
Okay, well, we're just at the start of the summer. Are people going to get the chance to see the Miller Yule Band over the next month or two?
Yeah, well, I've got a few gigs coming up. I'm down in Hamilton next week supporting an Aussie band, and then I'm in Raglan supporting the same band at the Yacht Club, so if you want to catch me solo, I'll be down there.
Yep.
But other than that, just kind of looking forward to having a holiday, because I haven't really had one in 2 years.
Cool.
But yeah, just time to refresh, and then plenty of time to, you know, kick 2018 in the butt.
Hope so. Well, do you feel that, I was just before seeing you, Miller, I was just catching, I think it was in the Herald website this week, there was a bit of a look back at what happened to one Kiwi band called Zed, and how about a decade or so ago they were doing pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
But they, if you read through, it just reinforces what a hard slog it is to make your way, and a lot of things have got to fall into place.
Exactly.
Are you as sort of focused and dedicated as ever to trying to make something work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100%, you know, into it, and I think you've got to be. But, I mean, you can be 100% into it. You can write the best songs. You can have a great performance, a great gig and everything. But, you know, if the right people that need to hear you aren't there, you know, something might not happen. Or if it's the planets need to align if you really want something to happen. And that's that bit of luck. So you can do everything. You can tick all the boxes. And it's just you hope that you got that bit of luck as well. But it's just about, because of that, you just got to enjoy the journey and not strive for what may or may not happen. Just enjoy everything that happens as it happens.
That sounds very sound advice. I hope it does happen for you. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Her hand in mine, she cuts me up like diamonds. And kissing on the streetlights and going out on Saturday night, she cuts me up like diamonds. Feels so good, it feels so right. She's always giving me butterflies. She cuts me up like diamonds. It feels so good. Let's go the long way, take it real slow. Oh, it feels so good, it feels so right. She's always giving me butterflies. She cuts me up like diamonds. It feels so good, it feels so right. Fall into pieces on the inside. She cuts me up. I love the pain. She brings me to my knees. Lord, I'm begging her.
Now, to a film which, you know, if you've read my review on our website, cravepodcast.com, you'll realise, frankly, it's a wonder this film ever got made. The film is called Wonder. And yeah, Simon, please.
Well, okay, let's just say that it's meant to be, or it is, a family movie, a tearjerker story. It's about a young lad born with, we don't know why, but he's born with some apparently severe facial deformities. And the film is about how, once he gets to, I think it's 10, he, after years of being homeschooled, his parents send him to school. His parents are played by Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson. The school principal is Mandy Patinkin. The boy, his name is Augie, short for August, is played by Jacob Tremblay. And I note, Steve, you used a very carefully measured, well thought out phrase in your review called bollocks.
Yes.
Which I thought was, you know, point.
And I stand by it.
Well, you're gonna be shocked. You're gonna fall over. I'm gonna take a little bit of an issue with you, but before I do, let loose, Mr. McCabe. Let loose.
Well, look, let's be honest about this. It was absolute rubbish. The idea was it was going to be a tearjerker where we're supposed to feel incredibly sorry for this poor lad, Augie, who's got this undefined, vaguely non-specific facial deformity, which leaves him looking very, very slightly peculiar. Not particularly. I mean, you know, to hear them talk about it, you'd think he is Son of Elephant Man. Mm. And yet he looks very slightly droopy.
Slightly droopy, that's a good expression.
That's all there is. I mean, you know, the makeup department did not go crazy on this because obviously they didn't want to freak out the audience too badly. But obviously, you know, he is apparently deformed. We're never told why. There's speculation in various critics and reviews that it was Treacher Collins syndrome, but they hand wave it off as being something genetic, and that's all we know about it.
Yeah,
so you've got Augie, who is given a voice in the voiceovers that makes him sound like he's about 45 years old. He does not speak with the wisdom and maturity of a, what is it, 13-year-old? The structure of the film is, it tries so hard to be intelligent and impressive and portentous. You've got these chapter headings that address, you know, the story is told from his point of view, his mate's point of view, his sister's point of view, and so on. But they never quite know how to follow through on anything. There's for example, a motif where he apparently sees Star Wars characters that aren't really there, who are supposed to be backing him up on stuff. They do two of them, and then they forget and get bored and move on from it because they never quite had the conviction to carry on with it. There's a metaphor about shoes early on, which, again, gets dropped immediately. There's a family pet gets killed off for absolutely no dramatic payoff whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't know what to do with itself. It's full of clichés. It's full of trite simplenesses. His teacher apparently used to be something on Wall Street, because, you know, 13-year-olds know what that means, don't they? He used to be something on Wall Street, and now, but then he decided to abandon that to follow his dream and become a junior high school teacher. No, he didn't. People don't do that. That's nonsense. His classroom looks like no child has ever set foot in it. It's perfect. It's immaculate. This is not any classroom. And I've been a teacher for more years than I care to think about. I have never, ever seen a classroom that looks like that nice.
Okay.
It is rubbish. Anytime the family get together, there's a Wilson brother in. I can't even remember which one. They are interchangeable. There's a Wilson brother, and there's Julia Roberts. And anytime somebody says something that's even remotely entertaining, there are howls of hilarity and laughter, as though George Bernard Shaw himself were in the room. It is formulaic. It is trite. When I went to a press screen, they handed out bags of popcorn. They should have handed out syringes of insulin. It is so sickly sweet. This film is... I mean, look, Mandy Patinkin. It's Mandy Patinkin. Every time I see him, he came on the screen, I wanted him to pull out a sword and say, "My name is Inigo Montoya." And by the end of the film, I wanted to turn to him and say, "Prepare to die." Seriously,
okay,
he's by far the best thing in it. And he's criminally wasted. It was rubbish. And you're going to now try and defend this film, Simon? You are dead to me now. I'm sorry, we're done.
Okay, I don't actually disagree with much that you said. I think it was maudlin. I think it was the story structure, as you said, with the chapter headings, they fizzled out and didn't go anywhere.
No.
I did think that Owen Wilson, it was Owen Wilson who played the husband. I thought he was...
How could you tell?
Well, I think he was out of his depth. I don't think he had the acting skills to bring to that part at all. And I thought he was found out. He was found out. So it was a bad bit of casting there. Look, in the classroom, there was the usual array of cliched characters, the bully those are the bully's supporters and one or two who feel sympathetic. The plot is tired and predictable.
Yes.
So that's all true. But I would be absolutely lying if I didn't say that occasionally I did feel moved by it. And I'm trying to think, well, why did I? If it was so saccharine sweet. And partly because you might cringe here, and this might be the end of a beautiful relationship, but I actually quite like Julia Roberts, I've decided.
Well, yeah, she has her moments, doesn't she?
Yeah, I thought she was the... I mean, putting aside...
She gets a sympathy vote, doesn't she?
Yeah. I mean, putting aside Mandy Patinkin, as you say, we didn't see much of him, but... If it wasn't, she carried the movie acting-wise, in my opinion. And I thought she did, playing the role of the mother, she brought some skill to that role of trying to shepherd this young lad through life. And I actually felt, for her, that character was what I kind of related to, I guess. And I thought Mandy Patinkin, in those few scenes, he absolutely nailed the scenes he had. And I guess I'd say that those two actors gave me something to cling on to. But I don't just, you know, for some reason I took something away from that. But you're right, the movie was,
I think the word we're looking for here is, in fact, bollocks, isn't it, really?
Well, it was sugarful was the word. But I don't have this quite the vehemence that you do, but I can't go and say, go and see it.
No.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it got panned. I mean, you know, opinions are opinions. I saw, and this doesn't mean anything, I guess. One British newspaper absolutely panned it, but one is very well-established New York newspaper with the Times at the end of it quite liked it. So, I mean, who's to know? It's just all what you take from these things is what you bring into them, I suppose. Anyway.
Well, that's true.
But anyway, I can't go up there and say you must go see this film.
Look, just do you remember, and I mean, we'll respect the concept of spoilers here, even though it doesn't deserve any respect. Do you remember that the closing sequence, we won't even discuss the details because that would have to bring back memories that are too painful. Do you remember the closing sequence?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
End of the school year?
Yes.
Is it just, I mean, that was, maybe it is just me, I don't know. That was unforgivable.
Well, you could see it coming and it was... I don't know. Actually, you know what? That you're talking about this, and Mandy Patinkin has quite a bit to do in that final.
Yes.
So, again, he kind of just helps you get through it with some degree of not wanting to throw up in a bucket. So, anyway, I'm trying to be kind.
You are too nice, Mercep. You are far too nice.
I know.
You just need to be honest about it. It was crap. Let's just be blunt about this. Look, can we please, I'm begging you, can we move on?
Yes, let's do it.
I think we should.
Now, you, I think, have not risen to my challenge. Is this correct?
I've not done my homework.
No. So in our last podcast, we both talked about, or Steve talked about, the new version, the new filmic version of Murder on the Orient Express, starring and directed by Sir Kenneth Branagh. I said... Look, I remember the 1974 film, which I really enjoyed. I remember the ending. I didn't feel I needed to see the new one. And we both thought, well, why don't we both see the other version and compare notes? But you didn't, you bugger. But anyway.
Life gets in the way, Simon. I was busy seeing Harry Styles. What can I tell you?
So, but what I did, Steve, was I did see the Kenneth Branagh film. And then, because it's like decades since I'd seen Albert Finney, I actually rented the 74 film and saw that as well.
Oh, right. You are keen.
Well, I just thought if I'm going to talk about it, I just thought I needed to refresh my memory because I did remember quite a bit about it. But
Right.
So what you got to say is, and I won't go on too long, but there's a real stark contrast between these two films. They really have completely different approaches, even though it's the same story by Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh gives you a story with obviously a modern day production values. It's better directed, I suppose you'd say. It's got pace. It's got CGI where you need it. It's a bit more energetic. The editing is quicker. He plays Poirot with a bit more broad-shouldered and a little slimmer around the waistline than does Albert Finney.
Right.
He's almost an action hero, sort of. He's the one with the fight scene. There's a scene at the beginning of the film you saw, Steve, where Poirot makes use of a walking stick to apprehend a bad guy.
Yes, yes.
And I thought that little scene was almost like a Guy Ritchie style thing. So it was being a little more middle. Pitching for the market of out for so good old entertainment, wasn't it? And
yes.
and Branagh certainly humanized Poirot. Lots of close-ups of his eyes and showing the emotion, the watery intention when he was finding out about the terrible backstory to the crime. So it did its job very well. Then I reminded myself of a film made 43 years earlier.
Right.
Starts off much more slowly. The shots take longer to happen. It is a real train, and it's stuck in real snow, but it things take a while to get going. And Sidney Lumet was the director.
Lumet, I believe.
Yeah, Lumet, you're right, is the director. This is the key difference. The earlier film really is telling the story of the mystery.
Okay.
And it's Poirot is not that prominent in the early scenes. He's just one of the characters you're introduced to.
Right.
He becomes more prominent. And by the end, he gives a cracking centre stage performance. And Finney was nominated for an Oscar for that film. But it's not tugging at the heartstrings in quite the same way as Branagh does. It allows the plot, the clues to sort of fall as they will. And I'm just going to very, very quickly, I know we're running out of time, but very quickly to give you a couple of examples.
Simon,
of...
it's a podcast. We have all the time.
Oh, yeah, I keep thinking I'm doing a radio program.
You're not on RNZ anymore, mate.
Oh, okay. Hey, listen, so Lauren Bacall plays Mrs. Hubbard. And the boss of the train is Bianchi, is played by Martin Balsam. Here's an exchange. It wasn't in the Kenneth Branagh story. Lauren Bacall says, "There was a man in my compartment last night. It was pitch dark, of course, and my eyes were closed in terror." Martin Balsam says, "Then how did you know it was a man?" She replies, "Because I've enjoyed very warm relationships with both my husbands." "With your eyes closed?" "That helped."
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes. And then later, John Gielgud plays Beddoes. That's the part that was played by who? The guy from I, Caligula. I've forgotten his name now. Anyway, sorry. Derek Jacobi. So John Gielgud plays the Derek Jacobi role earlier on.
They are the same person, you know that, don't you?
Yeah, and he's Beddoes. And there's an interchange between him and the Italian motor industry guy called Foscarelli. And Foscarelli says, "Hey, what are you reading, Mr. Beddoes?" "Love's Captive by Mrs. Arabella Richardson." "Is it about sex?" "No, it's about 10:30, Mr. Foscarelli." Yes, it was just lovely lines delivered in a very, you know, not in a shotgun fast type way. They had time to dwell on them.
No, but there's a delicious 1970s droll British dryness.
Yeah, much more so. And I think that was the other thought I had, was that the cast of 74 lived their lives much closer to the mid-1930s when the story was set.
Right.
And I maybe had a different sort of sensibility about how to act it and perform it. Albert Finney does a really different portrayal. He's quite stout. He's very finickety and pedantic. You see him with a hairnet cover his oily hair, and a little cover to cover his moustache, to keep his moustache nice and teat. So he's quite egotistical and vain.
Well, does everyone do that?
Yeah. So very different types of performance. Neither film, you can't really say one is better than the other because they're so different. But I think I enjoyed the first film, especially as you got into it more, for what it's worth.
Well, I think you have convinced me. I think I need to revisit it.
And the other thing, I have to be brutally honest.
Go on. Just between you and me, no one else is listening.
Okay, which is because it came out, 74?
Yes.
And Sean Connery was in this cast. I mean, many other very good actors. And I was still, as a young lad, a bit of a James Bond, Sean Connery fan. I'm sure that had something to do with drawing me to the cinema at that time. I have vague memories of it. So he's still with us, I think. Anyway, so there you are. Our dissertation on a film. Today's a film discussion debate is over. Can you please tell us what else is coming up on the Crave horizon? Because I think it's been a busy end to the year.
Well, it is. I mean, music's the big thing that's coming up. The film I want to see is Paddington 2. But that's going to be toward the end of the year. I can't wait to see that. The first Paddington film. You saw it, didn't you?
Didn't.
You didn't. Take any... If you happen to have any small people in your life,
Yes, I
take
do.
Take them. You'll be glad. They'll be glad you did.
Okay.
And Paddington 2, which is already open in the UK, and is getting rave reviews, is coming here very shortly. And I'll be honest, I can't wait.
Okay, great.
I will love every second of that. On the more sophisticated and mature entertainment front.
Yes.
There is a electronic music artiste by the name of Sia, who I'm not terribly familiar with, but apparently the young people are very impressed with her. She's playing at Mount Smart Stadium on Tuesday night, which is an odd night for a stadium show, but okay. you don't fuss. We've got Cat Stevens stroke Yusuf.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one's a support act there. I'm quite figure that one out.
Yeah.
He's coming up to Auckland on the 13th of December. Then he's doing New Plymouth and Christchurch. Following evenings.
Yes.
Fortnight from now, obviously, Paul McCartney is going to be here. And then one that's just been announced that's of kind of interest. Are you familiar with Jimmy Barnes?
I am, yes, indeed.
Of Cold Chisel fame. And obviously, we don't usually favour Australians on this show, obviously, for, you know, obvious reasons.
Yes, yes.
But he's doing a tour called Working Class Man, an evening of stories and songs.
Oh, another one combining songs and stories. Goodness me.
Yeah, but he's absolutely upfront about this. You know, he's saying, you know, that's what it is. He's released a memoir called Working Class Boy.
Yeah.
And so now he's doing a show called Working Class Man.
Okay.
And he's playing in theatres. So, I tell a lie. He's actually doing the Spark Arena.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd like Stevie.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's very little like Stevie, to be perfectly honest. I can't imagine he'll be quite so self-indulgent, but he's going to be in Christchurch, in Auckland, and in Hamilton.
Okay,
in May. I have a feeling that one could be one that's worth looking out for.
Yeah, we saw him open 2-3 years ago for Mr. Springsteen. That was the tour before the most recent one. And I've seen him, he's done a big 60 Minutes type expose on Australia, talking about his dalliance, had dalliances over his career with drugs, and I think he's almost died at various times. So there'd be a lot for him to talk about, for sure. Okay,
well,
cool.
If you can remember any of it.
Yeah. And the other thing, I think possibly by the time we get together again next, I think that the next installment of Star Wars may have come out, or very close to it as well. That's another film that I probably will go and see just to see what it's like.
Well, for the sake of completeness, really, it'd be rude not to.
It would be rude not to.
Yes,
anyway.
I'd forgotten about that one. That's very, 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 very shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. The Last Jedi. Anyway, I think we've done our dash. I have.
I think we've pretty much nailed entertainment in Auckland for the last fortnight.
Yeah, we have indeed. So,
If it was worth seeing, we've talked about
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So we would like to hear from you. If you've got any comments for us, please do get in touch. I'd like to get your feedback. You can email us. The email address is podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Twitter or on Facebook at Crave Podcast.
So you can. So I'm Simon Mercier.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.
It certainly has.